It will surround itself with publicists, practical jurists, administrators, diplomats and, finally, with persons prepared by a special super-educational training in our special schools. These persons will have cognizance of all the secrets of the social structure. They will know all the languages that can be made up by political alphabets and words. They will be made acquainted with the whole underside of human nature, with all its sensitive chords on which they will have to play. These chords are the cast of mind of the Goyim, their tendencies, shortcomings, vices and qualities, the particularities of classes and conditions. Needless to say that the talented assistants of authority, of whom I speak, will be taken not from among the Goyim, who are accustomed to perform their administrative work without giving themselves the trouble to think what its aim is, and never consider what it is needed for. The administrators of the Goyim sign papers without reading them, and they serve either for mercenary reasons or from ambition. We shall surround our government with a whole world of economists. That is the reason why economic sciences form the principal subject of the teaching given to the Jews. Around us again will be a whole constellation of bankers, industrialists, capitalists and, the main thing, millionaires, because in substance everything will be settled by the question of figures. For a time, until there will no longer be any risk in entrusting responsible posts in our states to our brother Jews, we shall put them in the hands of persons whose past and reputation are such that between them and the people lies an abyss, persons who, in case of disobedience to our instructions, must face criminal charges or disappear, this in order to make them defend our interest to their last gasp. Protocol number 9. In applying our principles, let attention be paid to the character of the people in whose country you live and act, a general, identical application of them, until such time as the people shall have been re-educated to our pattern, cannot have success. But by 32. Approaching their application cautiously, you will see that not a decade will pass before the most stubborn character will change and we shall add new people to the ranks of those already subdued by us. The words of the liberal, which are in effect the words of our Masonic watchword, namely, liberty, equality, fraternity, will, when we come into our kingdom, be changed by us into words no longer of a watchword, but only an expression of idealism, namely, into the right of liberty, the duty of equality, the ideal of brotherhood. That is how we shall put it, and so we shall catch the bull by the horns. De facto, we have already wiped out every kind of rule except our own, although de jure there still remain a good many of them. Nowadays, if any states raise a protest against us, it is only pro forma at our discretion and by our direction, for their anti-Semitism is indispensable to us for the management of our lesser brethren. I will not enter into further explanations, for this matter has formed the subject of repeated discussions amongst us. For us there are no checks to limit the range of our activity. Our super-government subsists in extra-legal conditions which are described in the accepted terminology by the energetic and forcible word, dictatorship. I am in a position to tell you with a clear conscience that at the proper time we, the lawgivers, shall execute judgment and sentence, we shall slay and we shall spare, we, as head of all our troops, are mounted on the steed of the leader. We rule by force of will, because in our hands are the fragments of a once powerful party, now vanquished by us. And the weapons in our hands are limitless ambitions, burning greediness, merciless vengeance, hatreds and malice. Most stubborn character will change and we shall add new people to the ranks of those already subdued by us. The words of the liberal, which are in effect the words of our Masonic watchword, namely, liberty, equality, fraternity, will, when we come into our kingdom, be changed by us into words no longer of a watchword, but only an expression of idealism, namely, into the right of liberty, the duty of equality, the ideal of brotherhood. That is how we shall put it, and so we shall catch the bull by the horns. De facto, we have already wiped out every kind of rule except our own, although de jure there still remain a good many of them. Nowadays, if any states raise a protest against us, it is only pro forma at our discretion and by our direction, for their anti-Semitism is indispensable to us for the management of our lesser brethren. I will not enter into further explanations, for this matter has formed the subject of repeated discussions amongst us. For us there are no checks to limit the range of our activity. Our supergovernment subsists in extra-legal conditions which are described in the accepted terminology by the energetic and forcible word, dictatorship. I am in a position to tell you with a clear conscience that at the proper time we, the lawgivers, shall execute judgment and sentence, we shall slay and we shall spare, we, as head of all our troops, are mounted on the steed of a leader. We rule by force of will, because in our hands are the fragments of a once powerful party, now vanquished by us. And the weapons in our hands are limitless ambitions, burning greediness, merciless vengeance, hatreds and malice. It is from us that the all-engulfing terror proceeds. We have in our service persons of all opinions, of all doctrines, restorating monarchists, demagogues, socialists, communists, and utopian dreamers of every kind. We have harnessed them all to the task, each one of them on his own account is boring away at the last remnants of authority, is striving to overthrow all established form of order. By these acts all states are in torture, they exhort to tranquility, are ready to sacrifice for peace, but we will not give them peace until they openly acknowledge our international supergovernment, and with submissiveness. The people have raised a howl about the necessity of settling the question of socialism by way of an international agreement. Division into fractional parties has given them into our hands, for, in order to carry on a contested struggle one must have money, and the money is all in our hands. We might have reason to apprehend a union between the clear-sighted force of the Goy kings on their thrones and the blind force of the Goy mobs, but we have taken all the needful measure against any such possibility. Between the one and the other force we have erected a bulwark in the shape of a mutual terror between them. In this way the blind force of the people remains our support and we only, shall provide them with a leader and, of course, direct them along the road that leads to our goal. In order that the hand of the blind mob may not free itself from our guiding hand, we must every now and then enter into close communion with it, if not actually in person, at any rate through some of the most trusty of our brethren. When we are acknowledged as the only authority, we shall discuss with the people personally on the marketplaces, and we shall instruct them in questions of the political in such a wise as may turn them in the direction that suits us. Who is going to verify what is taught in the village schools? But what an envoy of the government or a king on his throne himself may say cannot but become immediately known to the whole state, for it will be spread by the voice of the people. In order not to annihilate the instructions of the Goyim before it is time, we have touched them with craft and delicacy, and have taken hold of the ends of the springs which move their mechanism. These springs lay in a strict but just sense of order, we have replaced them by the chaotic license of liberalism. We have got our hands into the administration of 33. The law, into the conduct of elections, into the press, into liberty of the person, but principally into education and training as being the cornerstones of a free existence. We have fueled, bemused and corrupted the youth of the Goyim by rearing them in principles and theories which are known to us to be false, although it is by us that they have been inculcated. Above the existing laws without substantially altering them, and by merely twisting them into contradictions of interpretations, we have erected something grandiose in the way of results. These results found expression first in the fact that the interpretations masked the laws, afterwards they entirely hid them from the eyes of the government owing to the impossibility of making anything out of the tangled web of legislation. This is the origin of the theory, of course, of arbitration. You may say the Goyim will rise upon us, arms in hand, if they guess what is going on before the time comes, but in the West we have against this a maneuver of such appalling terror that the very stoutest hearts quail. The undergrounds, metropolitans, those subterranean corridors which, before the time comes, will be driven under all the capitals and from whence those capitals will be blown into air with all their organizations and archives, but principally into education and training as being the cornerstones of a free existence. We have fueled, bemused and corrupted the youth of the Goyim by rearing them in principles and theories which are known to us to be false, although it is by us that they have been inculcated above the existing laws without substantially altering them, and by merely twisting them into contradictions of interpretations, we have erected something grandiose in the way of results. These results found expression first in the fact that the interpretations masked the laws, afterwards they entirely hid them from the eyes of the government owing to the impossibility of making anything out of the tangled web of legislation. This is the origin of the theory, of course, of arbitration. You may say the Goyim will rise upon us, arms in hand, if they guess what is going on before the time comes, but in the West we have against this a maneuver of such appalling terror that the very stoutest hearts quail. The undergrounds, metropolitans, those subterranean corridors which, before the time comes, will be driven under all the capitals and from whence those capitals will be blown into air with all their organizations and archives. Protocol number 10. Today I begin with a repetition of what I said before, and I beg you to bear in mind that governments and peoples are content in the political with outside appearances. And how, indeed, are the Goyim to perceive the underlying meaning of things when their representatives give the best of their energies to enjoying themselves? For our policy it is of greatest importance to take cognizance of this detail. It will be of assistance to us when we come to consider the division of authority, freedom of speech, of the press, of religion, faith, of the law of association, of equality before the law, of the inviolability of property, of the dwelling, of taxation, the idea of concealed taxes, of the reflex force of the laws. All these questions are such as ought not to be touched upon directly and openly before the people. In cases where it is indispensable to touch upon them, they must not be categorically named. It must merely be declared without detailed exposition that the principles of contemporary law are acknowledged by us. The reason of keeping silence in this respect is that by not naming a principle we leave ourselves freedom of action, to drop this or that out of it without attracting notice. If they were all categorically named they would appear to have been already given. The mob cherishes a special affection and respect for the geniuses of political power and accepts all their deeds of violence with the admiring response, "Rascally, well, yes, it is rascally, but it is clever!" A trick, if you like, but how craftily played, how magnificently done, what imprudent audacity! We count upon attracting all nations to the task erecting the new fundamental structure, the project for which has been drawn up by us. This is why, before everything, it is indispensable for us to arm ourselves and to store up on ourselves that absolutely reckless audacity and irresistible might of the spirit which in the person of our active workers will break down all hindrances on our way. When we have accomplished our coup d'etat we shall say then to the various peoples, "Everything has gone terribly badly, all have been worn out with sufferings. We are destroying the causes of your torment, nationalities, frontiers, differences of coinages. You are at liberty, of course, to pronounce sentence upon us. But can it possibly be a just one if it is confirmed by you before you make any trial of what we are offering you?" Then will the mob exalt us and bear us up in their hands in a unanimous triumph of hopes and expectations. Voting, which we have made the instrument which will set us on the throne of. 34. The world by teaching even the very smallest units of members of the human race to vote by means of meetings and agreements by groups, will then have served its purposes and will play its part then for the last time by a unanimity of desire to make close acquaintance with us before condemning us. To secure this we must have everybody vote without distinction of classes and qualifications. Means of meetings and agreements by groups will then have served its purposes and will play its part then for the last time by a unanimity of desire to make close acquaintance with us before condemning us. To secure this, we must have everybody vote without distinction of classes and qualifications. In order to establish an absolute majority, which cannot be got from the educated propertied classes. In this way, by inculcation in all a sense of self-importance, we shall destroy among the goyim the importance of the family and its educational value and remove the possibility of individual minds splitting off, for the mob, handled by us, will not let them come to the front nor even give them a hearing. It is accustomed to listen to us only who pay it for obedience and attention. In this way we shall create a blind, mighty force which will never be in a position to move in any direction without the guidance of our agents set at its head by us as leaders of the mob. The people will submit to this regime because it will know that upon these leaders will depend its earnings, gratifications and the receipt of all kinds of benefits. A scheme of government should come ready-made from one brain, because it will never be clinched firmly if it is allowed to be split into fractional parts in the minds of many. It is allowable, therefore, for us to have cognizance of the scheme of action but not to discuss it lest we disturb its artfulness, the interdependence of its component parts, the practical force of the secret meaning of each clause. To discuss and make alterations in a labor of this kind by means of numerous votings is to impress upon it the stamp of all rash machinations and misunderstanding which have failed to penetrate the depth and nexus of its plottings. We want our schemes to be forcible and suitably concocted. Therefore we ought not to fling the work of genius of our guide to the fangs of the mob or even of a select company. These schemes will not turn existing institutions upside down just yet. They will only affect changes in their economy and consequently in the whole combined movement of their progress, which will thus be directed along the paths laid down in our schemes. Under various names there exists in all countries approximately one and the same thing. Representation, ministry, senate, state council, legislative and executive corps. I need not explain to you the mechanism of the relation of these institutions to one another, because you are aware of all that. Only take note of the fact that each of the above named institutions corresponds to some important function of the state, and I would beg you to remark that the word important I apply not to the institution but to the function. Consequently, it is not the institutions which are important but their functions. These institutions have divided up among themselves all the functions of government, administrative, legislative, executive, wherefore they have come to operate as do the organs in the human body. If we injure one part in machinery of state, the state falls sick, like a human body, and will die. When we introduced into the state organism the poison of liberalism, its whole political complexion underwent a change. States have been seized with a mortal illness, blood poisoning. All that remains is to await the end of their death agony. Liberalism produced constitutional states, which took the place of what was the only safeguard of the goyim, namely, despotism, and a constitution, as you well know, is nothing else but a school of discords, misunderstandings, quarrels, disagreements, fruitless party agitations, party whims, in a word, a school of everything that serves to destroy the personality of state activity. The Tribune of the Talkeries has, no less effectively than the press, condemned the rulers to inactivity and impotence, and thereby rendered them useless and superfluous, for which reason indeed they have been in many countries deposed. Then it was that the era of republics became possible of realization, and then it was that we replaced the ruler by a caricature of a government, by a president, taken from 35. The mob, from the midst of our puppet creatures, our slaves. This was the foundation of the mine which we have laid under the Goy people, I should rather say, under the Goy peoples. In the near future we shall establish the responsibility of presidents. By that time we shall be in a position to disregard forms in carrying through matters for which our personal puppet will be responsible. What do we care if the ranks of those striving for power should be thinned, if there should arise a deadlock from the impossibility of finding presidents, a deadlock which will finally disorganize the country? In order that our scheme may produce this result, we shall arrange elections in favor of such presidents as have in their past some dark, undiscovered stain, some Panama or other. Then they will be trustworthy agents for the accomplishment of our plans out of fear of revelations and from the natural desire of everyone who has attained power, namely, the retention of privileges, advantages and honor connected with the office of president. The Chamber of Deputies will provide cover for, will protect, will elect the president, but we shall take from it the right to propose new, or make changes in existing laws. For this right will be given by us to the responsible president, a puppet in our hands. Naturally, the authority of the president will then become a target for every possible form of attack, but we shall provide him with a means of self-defense and the right of an appeal to the people, for the decision of the people over the heads of their representatives, that is to say, an appeal to the same blind slave of ours, the majority of the mob. Independently of this, we shall invest the president with the right of declaring a state of war. We shall justify this last right on the ground that the president, as chief of the whole army of the country, must have it at his disposal, in case of need, for the defense of the new Republican Constitution. The right to defend which will belong to him as the responsible representative of this Constitution. It is easy to understand that in these conditions the key of the shrine will lie in our hands. And no one outside ourselves will any longer direct the force of legislation. Besides this, we shall, with the introduction of the new Republican Constitution, take from the chamber the right of interpolation on government measures, on the pretext of preserving political secrecy, and, further, we shall by the new Constitution reduce the number of representatives to a minimum, thereby proportionately reducing political passions and the passion for politics. If, however, they should, which is hardly to be expected, burst into flame, even in this minimum, we shall nullify them by a stirring appeal and reference to the majority of the whole people. Upon the president will depend the appointment of presidents and vice-presidents of the chamber and the senate. Instead of constant sessions of parliaments, we shall reduce their sittings to a few months. Moreover, the president, as chief of the executive power, will have the right to summon and dissolve Parliament, and, in the latter case, to prolong the time for the appointment of a new parliamentary assembly. But in order that the consequences of all these acts, which in substance are illegal, should not, prematurely for our plans, fall upon the responsibility established by us of the President, we shall instigate ministers and other officials of the higher administration about the president to evade his dispositions by taking measures of their own, for doing which they will be made the scapegoats in his place. This part we especially recommend to be given to be played by the Senate, the Council of State, or the Council of Ministers, but not to an individual official. The president will, at our discretion, interpret the sense of such of the existing laws as admit of various interpretation. He will further annul them when we indicate to him the necessity to do so. Besides this, he will have the right to propose temporary laws, and even new departures in the government constitutional working, the pretext both for the one and other being the requirements for the supreme welfare of the state. By such measures we shall obtain the power of destroying little by little, step by step, all that at the outset when we enter on our rights, we are compelled to introduce into the constitutions of states to prepare for the transition to an imperceptible abolition of every kind. This was the foundation of the mine which we have laid under the Goy people, I should rather say, under the Goy peoples. In the near future we shall establish the responsibility of presidents. By that time we shall be in a position to disregard forms in carrying through matters for which our personal puppet will be responsible. What do we care if the ranks of those striving for power should be thinned, if there should arise a deadlock from the impossibility of finding presidents, a deadlock which will finally disorganize the country? In order that our scheme may produce this result, we shall arrange elections in favor of such presidents as have in their past some dark, undiscovered stain, some Panama or other. Then they will be trustworthy agents for the accomplishment of our plans out of fear of revelations and from the natural desire of everyone who has attained power, namely, the retention of privileges, advantages and honor connected with the office of president. The Chamber of Deputies will provide cover for, will protect, will elect the President, but we shall take from it the right to propose new, or make changes in existing laws, for this right will be given by us to the responsible President, a puppet in our hands. Naturally, the authority of the President will then become a target for every possible form of attack, but we shall provide him with a means of self-defense and the right of an appeal to the people, for the decision of the people over the heads of their representatives, that is to say, an appeal to the same blind slave of ours, the majority of the mob. Independently of this, we shall invest the President with the right of declaring a state of war. We shall justify this last right on the ground that the President, as chief of the whole army of the country, must have it at his disposal, in case of need, for the defense of the new Republican Constitution. The right to defend which will belong to him as the responsible representative of this Constitution. It is easy to understand that in these conditions the key of the shrine will lie in our hands, and no one outside ourselves will any longer direct the force of legislation. Besides this, we shall, with the introduction of the new Republican Constitution, take from the Chamber the right of interpolation on government measures, on the pretext of preserving political secrecy, and, further, we shall by the new Constitution reduce the number of representatives to a minimum, thereby proportionately reducing political passions and the passion for politics. If, however, they should, which is hardly to be expected, burst into flame, even in this minimum, we shall nullify them by a stirring appeal and reference to the majority of the whole people. Upon the President will depend the appointment of Presidents and Vice-Presidents of the Chamber and the Senate. Instead of constant sessions of Parliaments, we shall reduce their sittings to a few months. Moreover, the President, as chief of the executive power, will have the right to summon and dissolve Parliament, and, in the latter case, to prolong the time for the appointment of a new parliamentary assembly. But in order that the consequences of all these acts, which in substance are illegal, should not, prematurely for our plans, fall upon the responsibility established by us of the President, we shall instigate ministers and other officials of the higher administration about the President to evade his dispositions by taking measures of their own, for doing which they will be made the scapegoats in his place. This part we especially recommend to be given to be played by the Senate, the Council of State, or the Council of Ministers, but not to an individual official. The President will, at our discretion, interpret the sense of such of the existing laws as admit of various interpretation. He will further annul them when we indicate to him the necessity to do so. Besides this, he will have the right to propose temporary laws, and even new departures in the government constitutional working, the pretext both for the one and other being the requirements for the supreme welfare of the state. By such measures we shall obtain the power of destroying little by little, step by step, all that at the outset when we enter on our rights, we are compelled to introduce into the constitutions of states to prepare for the transition to an imperceptible abolition of every kind. 36. Of Constitution, and then the time is come to turn every form of government into our despotism. The recognition of our despot may also come before the destruction of the Constitution. The moment for this recognition will come when the people's utterly wearied by the irregularities and incompetence, a matter which we shall arrange for, of their rulers, will clamor, "Away with them and give us one king over all the earth who will unite us and annihilate the causes of discords, frontiers, nationalities, religions, state debts, who will give us peace and quiet, which we cannot find under our rulers and representatives." But you yourselves perfectly well know that to produce the possibility of the expression of such wishes by all the nations, it is indispensable to trouble in all countries the people's relations with their governments so as to utterly exhaust humanity with dissension, hatred, struggle, envy, and even by the use of torture, by starvation, by the inoculation of diseases, by want, so that the goyim see no other issue than to take refuge in our complete sovereignty in money and in all else. But if we give the nations of the world a breathing space, the moment we long for is hardly likely ever to arrive. Our despotism. The recognition of our despot may also come before the destruction of the Constitution. The moment for this recognition will come when the people's utterly wearied by the irregularities and incompetence, a matter which we shall arrange for, of their rulers, will clamor, away with them and give us one king over all the earth who will unite us and annihilate the causes of discords, frontiers, nationalities, religions, state debts, who will give us peace and quiet, which we cannot find under our rulers and representatives.